Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, also known as NASCA. My name is Tammy Schopstall. I'll be your host tonight, and I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to contribute to NASCA, that would be absolutely awesome, and it would be tax deductible. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Tonight's show is an open mic show. We do have our special guest speaker, host, Dr. Jaime Romo. Dr. Romo is Dr. Romo is from San Diego, California. He's an educator, consultant, and author. He's also a commissioned minister who promotes healing from abuse and prevention of childhood sexual abuse, particularly in the religious authorities in the context of a religious setting. If you'd like to join us, the number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. We know we have a lot of people who stream in. We'd love for you to join the call and join the panel. If you choose to do so, I promise you it will be a very, very comforting show. So please call and join us. We definitely need some panel members. So we do have someone who has called in, my guest trailer, Mark from Louisiana. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
Good evening, Tammy. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. A little bit tired, not feeling too well tonight, but that's okay. I'm here in spirit, and we're going to have a fabulous show, so thank you for being here supporting us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll have some more callers call in. That number is 646-595-2118. And Dr. Jaime has joined us. So Dr. Jaime's mic is open. Good evening, Dr. Jaime. How are you?
I'm good. I'll join you in being a bit tired, but that means that I've been doing some things that I think are good.
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes it's an exhausting, stressed out, tired, and sometimes it's that tired where you get stuff done and accomplished, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to turn the mic over to you and get some beginning thoughts on whatever may be on your mind or a theme that you'd like to start with the show. The mic is yours, Dr. Jaime.
Thanks. And I guess I want to ask a question that I think relates to the theme. But I have never been able to hear all of the words exactly in that song, you know, the intro song. And I don't know how familiar you are with it, but if you could fill in, it would be great. But there's just one line at the very end. It says something about, because tomorrow you never know, like, what you'll find. Do you know the lyrics? Can you fill me in? Because I guess that last line is what I want to start with.
I don't, but I can tell you, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Carol's son wrote it or played it. It's some kind of affiliation with Carol, so we will have to ask her. I'm not quite sure. If Bill's listening, Bill, if you're listening and want to call in the show, sometimes he just listens. Maybe you can explain that to us. If not, we'll have to get with Carol. I'll have to listen to it again.
Yeah, and again, it's not urgent, but it does relate to a couple of thoughts. That idea of we never know what we're going to find, and I guess what's on my mind now is, on one hand, the topic of expectations and how we get them. You know, sometimes we get them through our lived experience. And then we have responses or reactions that, you know, can sometimes be unconscious, and that leads to, call it, bias. And then it leads to other behavior as well, sometimes, you know, helpful, sometimes not. And then on the other side of expectations is approaching mystery. And I don't know if we have time to listen to a short reading about mystery. But to me, they're related in that our expectations can sometimes be unrealistic. And we may be kind of driven to try to fulfill them. And maybe those expectations are imprinted from when we're real, really young. Sometimes we have expectations put on us that, you know, directly or indirectly, that we then, you know, are driven by in some ways, or shamed by and so on. And similarly, we put expectations on others, some realistic, some not. We are influenced by, I think, expectations that we see others put on others, and then what we do ourselves. And so I'm always interested in kind of what's behind our conscious thinking and what's behind our actions. And that links to the idea of mystery, because, as you may know, I'm a hospice chaplain, and I explore that with people. Like, there's this a big story that we're a part of, and we don't always understand it all. Not necessarily, we may not always like it all. A patient today said, yeah, well, I accept this, but I don't like it. The idea of mystery is, I think, can open up a deep sense of joy and wonder, aliveness, and that sometimes expectations can take away from that. So, I mean, it's just a two-page story. I could read that about mystery, and I have, you know, other thoughts about expectations, and I welcome the conversation of, you know, how people have gotten the expectations useful and not, and so on. What do you think?
Well, Mark, what do you think? We'll go to you first. Mark, do you have any thoughts on that?
You mean about reading the story?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would be interesting.
Okay. It's from an author called Rachel Naomi Remens, the doctor, from a book called My Grandfather's Blessings. And she was the person who was a physician, and then I think it was after her own cancer experiences, became, I think, a psychiatrist, and just has stories about her patients and life lessons. And so this one's called Mystery, with a capital M. The first time I heard the word mystery, capital M, I did not understand what it meant. As an avid reader of mystery stories, I had the idea that something is a mystery only because its solution has not yet been found. But mystery, small m, is different from mystery, capital M. By its very nature, mystery, with capital M, cannot be solved, can never be known. It can only be lived. We have not been raised to cultivate a sense of mystery. We may even see the unknown as an insult to our competence, a personal failing. Seen this way, the unknown becomes a challenge to action. But mystery does not require action. Mystery requires our attention. Mystery requires that we listen and become open. When we meet with the unknown in this way, we can be touched by a wisdom that can transform our lives. Mystery has great power. In the many years I've worked with people with cancer, I've seen mystery comfort people when nothing else can comfort them and offer hope when nothing else offers hope. I've seen mystery heal fear that is otherwise unhealable. For years I've watched people in the confrontation with the unknown recover awe, wonder, joy, and aliveness. They've remembered that life is holy, and they've reminded me as well. In losing our sense of mystery, we have become a nation of burned out people, people who wonder, do not burn out. Everything and everyone has a dimension of the unknown. Mystery helps us to see ourselves and others from the largest possible perspective as a unique and possibly endless process that may go on over lifetimes. To be living is to be unfinished. Nothing and no one is complete. The world and everything in it is alive. The sense of mystery can take us beyond disappointment and judgment to a place of expectancy. It opens us, in us, an attitude of listening and respect. If everyone has in them the dimension of the unknown, possibility is present at all times. Wisdom is present, is possible at all times. The mystery in anyone may speak to them and heal them in the grocery store. It may speak to us and heal us too. Knowing this enables us to listen to life from a place in us that is mystery also. Mystery requires that we relinquish an endless search for answers and become willing to not understand, that we be open to witness. Those who witness life eventually know far more than anyone can understand. Perhaps real wisdom lies in not seeking answers at all. Any answer we find will not be true for long. An answer is a place where we can fall asleep as life moves past us to its next question. After all these years, I've begun to wonder if the secret of living well is not in having all the answers, but in pursuing unanswerable questions in good company. And that's the end of that story. That's, I guess, what I think of is that last line that's, to me, particularly valuable in that, not having all the answers, but in pursuing unanswerable questions in good company. And that we maintain our humility and know that we don't have all the answers and that we're open, we're interdependent, we're interconnected, and we know ourselves and the world around us, even the most confusing, we know it better and, you know, by sharing. So to me that's a freeing and a empowering and expansive place to be. And, you know, on the other side is sometimes expectations can really get in the way. Expectations of there is one way, there is one right answer. So that's, thanks for listening.
No, absolutely. Well, we definitely have people popping in on us. I want to go ahead and introduce them so I don't lose their call. But then I want to go back. I just want to quickly introduce them and then give us an opportunity to comment on what you've read. So I'd like to welcome William from Alabama. Good evening, William. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just trying to swallow a drink here.
Okay.
I'm doing good.
Well, thank you for Good, good, good. Thank
and
you for joining us. I know
Darlene
you just
should be behind
us.
Me.
Yeah, she is. I see where she's popped in. And we've got another person after that pop in. So I know you didn't have an opportunity to listen to what Dr. Jaime has read for us, but once we get the commentary going, I know we'll all be able to participate. So thank you for being here.
Right. Sure.
Darlene, from Tennessee, thank you for being here.
Well, you're quite welcome, and thank y'all for being available as well.
Okay. Well, we'll get the commentary going because I think this is a common thread what we've read so far. I think we can pick up and have some good commentary. We do have another person who has joined us. It looks like they're streaming in. Who do we have the pleasure of joining us streaming in? We've got Dr. Jaime. We've got Mark from Louisiana, William from Alabama, Darlene, and we've got another caller. Somebody must be streaming in. Who else do we have a pleasure who I haven't mentioned their name? Hello?
Tammy, I tried to get I tried to find out who it was. There was never nobody
Hello?
Saying anything.
Okay. Well, we do have a listener who has chimed in. If you have an opportunity, your mic is open. And if you feel like talking, that's fine. If not, you can listen as well. Well, Dr. Jaime, I'd like to go back to what you read for us. I'm sorry?
I believe they just said hello. I thought I heard a hello back at you.
Yeah, hello, somebody. Hi.
Okay, well, we do have a pretty good panel. And Dr. Jaime did read us a little bit about mystery and the unknown. And I know you guys didn't hear a good bit of that, with the exception of Mark, because you guys just chimed in. But I think it's a really good topic that we can really have some good commentary on. You know, the mystery, I'm the type, I know my personality, mystery to me can be exciting. You know, when you think of mystery, we've got a little bit of background noise too. When you think of mystery, it can be scary. You know, not knowing what's going to happen can be scary for a lot of people. If we take it back to the world of child abuse, I mean, that's a lot of reasons why children don't tell, because they don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to go to a worse place? Are they going to be taken out of their home? Are they going to end up in foster care? You know, at least the environment that they're in, they know what they're dealing with. The mystery of the unknown keeps a lot of kids from telling. A lot of times, fear of the mystery and not knowing keeps us where we are. And it's not easy, but I've tried to condition myself and learn how to appreciate the mystery and see it as an exciting time to be able to learn something new and discover something new or participate in something new. Dr. Jaime, those are just my thoughts right off the top of my head. What do you think?
Oh, I appreciate that. That's exactly how I relate it to people who have experienced particularly child abuse, because kids don't have a perspective. Their brain isn't altogether formulated. They can't rationalize, and so they come to simple answers or conclusions that the world is not safe. They speak up, there's something wrong with them and more consequences. And there's an expression, fear is excitement without the breath. And so when you mention the exciting and scary parrot, I think, there is, the body doesn't have to face the unknown and see it as scary. It could see it as an adult, the adult perspective, I'm going to grow. This is life. We continue to face new things. And that's a big shift. And I start off with the idea that some expectations can really limit us based on old experiences, that maybe the world is not safe, that the universe is against me, that I shouldn't bring up my voice. A lot of things, that, expectations that are limiting. It's not a small thing to see newness or challenge in things that might seem intimidating or things that we don't like as scary or wanting to not be open.
Right. Well, let's get some thoughts from the panel. You know, I know you guys didn't hear what he read, but, you know, just the things that we've hit on about, you know, the mystery and not knowing, does anybody have any thoughts on that?
I have a little
Sterling?
Bit. And,
is that Mark? Go ahead, Mark.
No, that was
William.
Was it William? Okay.
Yeah, it was
Go ahead,
William. Some of that, too, has to do with confidence, and that can be shaky with the deal with confidence, not knowing, and stuff like that. So it can undermine some of the confidence of, like, the adventure. Some of them are scared to reach out and do what he's talking about, adventure, you know, because what he's talking about is that they have a fear in them that's instilled into them because of the abusive stuff. And that's where they have to overcome some of that. And that's why some of those programs and things are very necessary to overcome certain things and go out there and reach out like that.
Okay. Dr. Hami, do you have any thoughts on what William has shared?
Yeah, you know, I agree. And I always have that and. I mean, thinking of my own experience, growing up with the false expectations that I needed to be perfect because somehow I imagined that I was the cause of my dad's violence or that even that I was the cause of the abuse that happened to me. I grew up with, you know, all kinds of insecurity, you know, lack of confidence, lack of sense of fidelity, right, truth in myself. And so I would say, yeah, I get that, and I know how I've been kind of conditioned and how so much of my trajectory in life, both achievement and kind of suffering, was related to those early imprints of fear. And I also know the freedom that I have is different. The self that I have that I think is healthier than I've ever been. And the ongoing challenge to face, you know, things called fear, false expectations appearing real. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying, yeah, we can certainly be impacted and I think that's the shift from surviving something or maybe being a victim of something to saying, you know, this is my life now. I'm responsible for whatever happened to me. And I don't minimize others' experience. And on the other side, I don't like attempt to compete with it like I used to. I used to do the Pain Olympics all the time. You got a story. Let me tell you my story. I think that's, you know, what I'm responsible now for my health, happiness, wholeness. So I need to every day, you know, see something that in my work or in my other activities that I direct. I'm directing a conference next month. It's very complex, and I'm having this terrible conflict with my right-hand person. And I'm thinking, what is the universe trying to teach me? What is it that I'm to learn here? How can I understand this differently rather than hating this person and blaming them for, you know, stuff that they're not doing? So to me, it's practical, and I'm not saying it's simple at all, especially for people who have really suffered, who have been betrayed, you know, who see fear as something dangerous and in a negative, harmful way. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a tough one, you know, because I had my assistant quit on me about a year ago. And, you know, and I remember making this comment, Dr. Jaime. I remember telling my boss, you know, I must have bad karma. I must have done something to create this bad karma. And I came back to him the next day, and I told him, his name is Terry. I said, Terry, I've got to retract what I told you yesterday. I said, I don't have bad karma. I worked very hard to have good karma. I dodged a bullet, you know, and I looked at it from a different perspective. you know, I could have said, oh my, yeah, and I could have kept on, you know, what did I do? You know, my karma, I've done, you know, done something, you know, I'm doing something wrong. I took on the blame of what had happened. In reality, I wasn't to blame. You know, she exhibited bad behavior. She exhibited, you know, unprofessional, immature behavior. And she ended up leaving. You know, she quit. You know, I wanted to offer the job back. I told him I didn't want her back. And he let me as my department. She went out the door. I have a fabulous assistant now. So sometimes, and it was a fear of the unknown because, you know, he didn't know. She was there before I was. You know, he didn't know if I was going to be able to manage my department without her. You know, she was my clerk, but she did all the clerical stuff. And he basically said, well, you're either going to flourish or you're going to sink. Let's see what you do. You know, it's your department. Run it. You know, and I'm the controller and director of finance and human resources for a yacht club. So, you know, the fear of the unknown, and I had to work hard. But I did also have to let go of the personal blame of what happened. It's just sometimes it's just people's bad behavior. You know, with survivors, you know, with pedophiles, it's bad behavior. You know, I told a friend this morning, you know, he was going through this breakup, blah, 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 blah. I won't bore you with the gory details. But I told him, I said, based on what you're telling me, you're trying to rationalize dysfunction. And you can't sometimes rationalize dysfunction because you're trying to take a mature, rational way of thinking and apply it to this dysfunction. And you can't. Sometimes you have to say, that's just dysfunction, and move on from it. But that's the familiar situation. He's been with that girl for 4 years, 3 years, whatever. It was familiar with him. The fear of the unknown, the fear of being 52 and being alone, the fear of growing old alone was eating at him. But I just had to tell him, you're in a toxic relationship. You need to get out. You know, you either need to accept it for what it is or get out. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, sir? And then I want to get the audience involved. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think they're related. I mean, I like models, kind of math in a sense. If you think of like a window frame, on the left-hand side, if you think of familiar and the right-hand side is unfamiliar, and the bottom is easy and the top is difficult, well, familiar and easy could be a dysfunctional toxic relationship. It could be stuff that isn't that important, but that's not growth. If you think of unfamiliar but easy, that's a little bit of growth. I mean, it's like kind of comfortable tourists do. But to deal with the difficult and unfamiliar, that could sometimes be, you know, the most difficult. And this idea of, you know, the fear comes up huge in that area, the anxiety about not knowing. And to the reading, the author is just talking about, you know, maybe some things we're not going to know. We're just going to continue to learn and be with. And then we develop this capacity, I think, to not be panicked, not be afraid. And that's hard. I mean, that takes a lot of work. So I think they're related. You know, we can be afraid to let go of what's familiar, even if it's not good for us.
Right. Exactly. Darlene, what are your thoughts? I want to get you involved in this show. What are your thoughts of what you heard so far?
I'm sorry. I'm not doing so good today. But I thought was we accept the blame so much. And we were always told we were bad no matter what. So we got so much. Then when we become adults and stuff, we're so bad, we're so fat, we're so ugly, we're so this, we're so that. You know, I wasn't starting to heal any until I started those things and saying, hey, this came from somebody that was very toxic and abusive. I do a lot better without this person around. It's their stuff, you know, that they put on me. It's them. But I'm going to accept the blame on the things that I did wrong, but I'm not willing to take their blame on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that you're not doing well today,
anyway.
And I'm glad. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're here, because sometimes when we're not feeling good and we're feeling down, it's good to call into the show. It's good to get some support, and it takes our minds off of it. I've been on this show before and called in and been so tired, just so distraught, and you know, I don't want to say not looking forward to it, because I always look forward to it, but just you know, I'm not sure how much I'm going to be able to contribute. And had some of the best shows I've had on here before. So I'm glad you're here. I hope we can cheer you up. Thank you for letting us be a part of your day and your healing process. And I'm glad you and William called in. Dr. Hami, if you may or may not be aware, but William and Darlene are friends, and William served in the police force, I believe. So, and then Mark is in Louisiana. You said.
I used to. I haven't retired.
What you said, silly.
Yeah. So William, I'm sure you've seen a lot in your time serving as a police officer in the community support. And thank you for your service, by the way.
I served as a deputy sheriff.
Okay.
So with being a deputy sheriff, I saw a lot of it.
I can imagine.
You remember the case where the people were put in the suitcases and taken to the dump?
You were talking to Joanna Rogers.
Okay.
Were you a police officer
in that case?
No. I was retired out of it, but I was sworn into the search parties under the U.S. Marshals with a deputy sheriff that was active with me.
Wow.
And it is summer or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Darlene, I know a little bit about your story. You've shared with us over the years, and I know what you've been through, and you know, God bless you, because you're such a survivor and such a wonderful spirit. I'm so proud to have you in our NASCA family. And I know, the torment that you were put through. Can you give us any thoughts, maybe when you were going through what you went through, how did the fear of the unknown play into, what you had to deal with and how you dealt with it? And, if somebody may be listening, maybe streaming in, may understand, their story a little bit. What do you think?
There had been times, like I said, it was a matter of life and death where I was really walking on eggshells. I was afraid to walk to one room to another and all that. I was so afraid because some of the times my daddy would just walk up behind me and hit me in the head and knock me unconscious. And I wake up so many days later. I never knew when my daddy might come in and say, let's play hide-and-go-seek, and he would shoot at us with a 12-gauge. The unknown, it was scary because every day I wondered if it was a day that they were going to kill me. If they were going to, I had the fear of the unknown daily. It was hard walking that,
mm-hmm.
It was hard walking that life, but I was given that life, and by the mercy of God and grace of God, I'm surviving, But it was really tough, the unknown, because I wanted to run away some of the times, right? I wanted so bad to run away, but I was so afraid that if I ran away, whoever would bring me right back.
Okay.
And got to find out that did happen, so that's why it was on my mind, and I had just blocked it out.
Before
the police, they have to bring me straight back to the police, even though they saw me with broken bones or something, and they did not get me any help whatsoever. So, I'm sorry, I get mad about that. Sorry.
That's okay. No,
right,
you have a right to. Absolutely. Yeah, they had no right to put you through that. But thank God you survived. How does that affect you now? And I'll turn it back over to Dr. Jaime. Having to live with the mystery and having to live with the fear of unknown, that was a way of life for you for so long. And now, you're in a different situation. How do you deal with the mystery and the fear of the unknown now as an adult, being you had to deal with all that as a child?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Okay, well, I still have some problems because I told you about my baby being murdered or whatever.
Right.
I'm having trouble saying
right.
the word at the moment, I'm sorry. But I wrote in my second book. I'm just having some friends in the editing process right now, and I hope
mm-hmm.
to get it out there. But I did write that when I remembered, and it's going to be in that book.
Okay.
So it's very hard to write it. So it's going to be out there, So the fear of unknown about how, because they've already threatened my life, and they have even showed up at places where I didn't figure out how they knew where I was. And this was just a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was threatened. So,
mm-hmm.
The fear of unknown that they're going to, if they're ever going to really step outside, that all of a sudden I'm shot or something,
So you're still dealing with that fear? Are you still dealing
yeah,
with that fear?
It's very much a fear. Yeah, it's very much still a fear that I have to live with every day.
Hmm. Dr. Honey, what are your thoughts on what Darlena said?
Well, I really want to appreciate what you described as he thought about running away, but the police might just bring you right back. And there are experiences of abuse and then call it betrayal that reinforce that we stay silent, because we learn through those experiences, especially as children, we don't know who to trust, or we don't feel safe, and we don't have a sense of real choice or protection. Our voice, it's hard to bring it, and we can feel powerless. And I was thinking how when at some point we can feel safe, that makes a big difference in our own way. We have some choice about how to have boundaries. And this idea about writing, I think it's so important to name our experiences. That's part of processing it. I know I've had a few different ways of writing, things that some published, some didn't, but just the writing process helped me to process, helped me to look back from a different perspective. Now I'm seeing things differently than I could then, and some of it can be super painful. And at the same time, then it becomes less kind of raw and more of something that we have perspective about. And so I just really think that's a really valuable practice, is to give voice that we didn't have before, to have a choice of how we understand things now compared to then. And so it's definitely makes it difficult when we're ongoing, not safe, when we're ongoing, not sure we can trust. And that's just hard to really feel like we're going to walk into mystery, of course. Could we be open? I think the process, though, and it's my experience, is that it's as the more we do, the more we grow. I used to look at these strongman competitions on TV, and part of me is thinking they can lift heavy tires or something, but this experience that I've lived and other people have lived, that's strength. That's like superpower stuff. Once we develop, I mentioned before, being in this difficult and unfamiliar place, so hard, and it is in that we do grow. We may not feel it in the moment, but we grow like nothing else can call us, to develop not just strength, but and I hope compassion for ourselves, and then for other people. Thank you for sharing. It sounds like you're working with your experience. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I could continue using the support from my friends here and family here in Nebraska because it's really a tough out. I really liked what I heard this other person say not too long ago, that they're writing a book, and it's a mystery, a murder mystery, okay? And so they put the people in their lives as some of the people, and they have them as the personas in their book, even though it's a fiction book, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that is cool as heck. Well, that's one way that they're writing and getting their anger out or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Then they get caught in the book, and then they have to pay for what they did in the book, you know?
Yeah, to get a voice and to acknowledge, you said get anger out. I mean, otherwise it stays in us. So whether it ever gets published or not, I mean, we're expressing. And that was something that a lot of times we didn't have. We didn't have voice. That's creative.
Right.
Too, I kind of like to chime in here. Darlene's come a long ways from when I first met her. And I've seen a lot of issues, and I've seen a lot of improvement over the few years I've known her. And that's what we have to do with all that. We have to take that fear and make it smaller and give support to each other and things like that you can overcome stuff like that. And that's the very thing you're talking about, in what you were talking about there.
Go ahead, William.
From her past, she had many different issues like abandonment issues and things like that with her family that left her at grocery stores and things when they were little. She can tell you a lot about that, but that's just some of the things that I know are underlying issues with her is abandonment issues and then her PTSD and various things like that because being shot at. Now, I've had that happen to me. But that's a whole different ball game because I was in convenience stores when that happened. And that's a whole different thing.
Mine's my own parent that, you know, is supposed to take care of you and love you, but shooting at you with a shotgun, you know.
That was right, and the mean things they used to tell you.
I'm letting people know that's a nervous laugh. That is not a laugh was funny. You know what I'm saying? That was a nervous laugh I just did. Mm. And yes, I have abandonment issues with it. Whoever drives me to the store, if I can't find them around at Walmart or like if we went to a convenience store, I start panicking. And I actually go outside and look at the corner and see if it's still parked there that I believe it is. But I'm so afraid that I was left, you know. So that's how it still affects me today, you know.
Right. Well, you know, and I think you just hit the nail on the head, you know, where William is being shot at, you know, from robberies from convenience stores. Darlene, you have people shooting at you who were supposed to love and trust you. I mean, it's supposed to love and protect you. And that leads to broken trust. You know, how do you get that trust back in life? You know, it's tough because I agree with what William said and what Dr. Jaime said is, you know, we've got to overcome that and we've got to set boundaries. But how do you gain that trust back? You know, how do you trust anybody? The people who were supposed to love and protect you, you can't trust. How am I going to trust Joe Blow down the road? I don't. You know, and you know, it's not that I don't trust anybody fully. No one. I mean, even family members. You know, I just don't trust anyone. But that doesn't mean I can't have relationships with them. You know, I've learned the difference between. I don't see a relationship and trust as the same. I don't, and maybe that's not a good thing. But if I didn't have a relationship with the people I didn't trust, I wouldn't have a relationship with anybody because I don't trust anybody, you know? So, you know, I had to say, okay, you know, I will never turn my back on anybody, I've always got my guard up, but I can still, you know, I can still intermingle with this person, you know, whether it's a friend or a family member or a colleague or whatever the case may be. I don't fully trust anybody. Doesn't mean that I can't have a relationship with them. I don't know. That's just me. What do y'all think?
You hit a nail right on the head.
We'll have William and then we'll go back to Darlene. William, what were you saying?
The trust, it can affect the relationship depending on the relationship and how intimate that relationship is, because if the trust factors and things aren't there, the intimacy and the other factors in relationships are a problem.
Yeah.
And I think whatchamacallit could tell you more about that.
Dr. Jaime, yeah. Well, let's go to Darlene, and then we'll go to Dr. Jaime and get his thoughts. Darlene, what do you think? And no, I want to get Mark involved, too. Darlene, what do you think?
He called me whatchamacallit.
What?
William called me whatchamacallit.
Whatchamacallit.
Okay.
That's a southern term of endearment. Thank you very much. Go ahead, whatchamacallit, Darlene.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, I want to whatchamacallit candy bar, okay? but anyway, let's see, my train of thought. Well, how you go about trust and building the trust, one thing I have to separate the past people from the present people, okay? The people of my life today are not the same people of the past. Another thing I got to think about, guys don't want their wives done to them or their ex-girlfriends done to them? No, of course not. So why am I doing the same thing that I don't want them to do, you know? But we do have to have safe, you know, safe boundaries. But as far as not letting anyone in, you only have one life and you deserve to be loved. So you got to give it a shot sometime.
You got to give it a shot.
That's my answer on that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, that's a good answer. Let's go to Dr. Jaime, and then I want to make sure Mark gets involved. But I want Dr. Jaime to have an opportunity to comment on what we've talked about so far. Dr. Jaime?
Thanks. I think, you know, trust is foundational. And anybody who's felt the abuse and betrayal and, you know, all kinds of harm, physical, emotional, spiritual, sexual, all those things impact us and can disconnect us, you know, from a sense of safety and knowing, that some people are trustworthy. I just don't stop there. I mean, I appreciate that. It's my ongoing work that I've had experiences, and some things presently may remind me of those past people or things. And I do think that, you know, my happiness depends in a sense on how open I can be, not no boundaries, not letting, you know, untrustworthy people or, you know, toxic people do whatever. But again, that idea of mystery is not prejudging, and I do it plenty of times. I'm just saying it is so foundational. Brené Brown, you know, is a sociologist from the University of Texas at Austin, and she has this very famous talk about the power of vulnerability. And, you know, she makes a case. Anybody has a good reason to cover up, to be guarded. And then that also limits us from you know, a deep connection, a deep joy. So I appreciate that it's a challenge. I'm working on that, you know, trusting people and being willing, you know, I guess to be wrong sometimes. And I also really appreciate that idea of Darlene just shared, being able to separate past from present, and I am trustworthy. You know, it took me a long time to say that with confidence. Because I was always reacting to other people, but at some point I could acknowledge I am trustworthy, and so I can expect other people, have a good expectation that other people can be trustworthy too. And of course, not perfect, but I do think it's maybe a starting point and understandable. I just know for me, I'm happier when I'm not anticipating and resisting. And you know, we all have different experiences. We walk in different places and so on. No doubt, we could all claim, you know, with good reason to not trust the world. And the last thought is, you know, there's some study, an old sociologist looked at the Roadrunner, you know, a cartoon show, and said, they're like, why is it so popular? Why do adults keep watching this show that they saw when they were kids? And his conclusion was that people identified with the coyote because no matter what the coyote did, the universe is against the coyote. Things kept going bad. And that there's something about that. There's something appealing or basic about responding to fear, about responding to, you know, the negative. And, you know, so, yeah, I choose to, and I deeply believe more than ever that the universe is not against me, that it's for me in some way, and not just for me. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the mystery to link. It may sound very like in my head or abstract, and I don't say it or mean it that way.
No.
But,
well, you know, and you've made some valid points because, I mean, here I am 56 years old alone, you know, facing going alone, don't have a partner, you know, haven't dated lately, you know, feel unloved and unwanted and unappealing, you know, and I'm not an ugly woman. I'm, you know, I'm not 25 anymore, but I'm not, you know, I got a lot to offer somebody, but here I sit alone with no options, you know, and I've got to look at my own behavior too. Do I build such thick walls that I don't let anyone in ever? You know, I promised myself a long time ago I wouldn't be cynical, but is that not, did I not just describe myself? Am I not contradicting myself by saying, I don't want to be cynical, I'm never going to be cynical, but I don't trust anybody? You know, that's a little cynical. And, you know, I've got to take a look at myself and say, you know, yes, you know, this one let me down, this one let me down, this one let me down, this one let me down. You know, but will I come across people or someone at some point who won't let me down? I don't know. You know, when you've been let down so many times, it's hard not to become cynical, whether it's trust or whether it's whatever the case may be. You know, I've got to, you know, am I a product of my own behavior, you know, as a result of, you know, facing growing old alone because I don't trust anybody? But I've had reason to not trust people as well. You know, just like the assistant I just described, you know, she worked for me. We were friends. You know, not friends. I mean, I was her boss, but we had a good relationship. And out of the blue, you know, she starts, you know, conspiring behind my back. Well, you know, I thought I could trust her more than I could. You know, this guy I dated or this thing, I could name 1,000 people. You know, I think maybe if I had a different perspective, that, like you said, you know, don't expect the world to be against you. There are good people in this world. You know, maybe I'm just placing myself in situations where I'm not being exposed to people who are trustworthy. I have to look from within. I guess that's what I'm saying. Maybe I need to take a closer look within of my own behavior. I don't know. I don't know.
Can I offer a couple of thoughts?
Sure.
Well, one, I wish that, like if this were a Zoom call, you know, I could share screen and I could show a couple of images.
I would love that.
Yeah, I saw a couple recently where, in fact, I had on my computer. One of them, it looks like a person in a dark, you know, jean pants and jacket and backpack, walking like into a forest and snow all over the trees and snow down below. So it's just black and white photo. And if you look at it at first, it looks like a person running. And then if you look more closely, you see, oh, my, it's actually a dog running towards
that.
Us. And then there's this other one. Yeah, there are a lot of these things. They're like these, they're not optical illusions, but, you know, there's another one that looks like this weird, I don't know, moth, butterfly mm-hmm. thing. And then you look closely, oh, and it's a face, or a guy with this big old kind of cowboy hat. And there are mm-hmm. plenty. But my point is that we can be wired, you know, to notice dark and have associations with that. You know, our eyes just notice it. And we can be wired to our experiences of, you know, hurt, you know, don't do that again. And mm-hmm. there's an expression that cynics, because you mentioned being cynical, the cynics are optimists who have been hurt. And so I'm saying that this, we can get wired. And it makes sense to notice certain things or to interpret certain things. And so it takes us, you know, some practice to like expand what is familiar. You know, to
mm-hmm.
so that's yeah, I mean I just think it's normal, I would call, or natural to
mm-hmm.
to see things and interpret them as, you know, dangerous in some way. And my last cliche here is that the Chinese symbol for crisis is two symbols. One of them means danger, and the other one means opportunity. And so to me that says that, you know, we always have a choice, you know, like how are we seeing things?
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm not saying it's easy.
And I
appreciate
yeah.
the difference between past and present.
Yeah, because Darlene mentioned that, and I think that's a really good point. Well, thank you for that feedback. I want to go to Mark and make sure Mark has an opportunity to participate if he has any thoughts. Mark, what do you think about all this?
Well, in regards to trust, I think myself, I'm on probably much on the cynical side, where, you know, we want to trust people we meet, especially new people, but then as you get to know them, something happens that you don't trust them. Whether it could be anything. I know that, you know, it could be abuse, or it could be bullying, or it could be being made fun of. And then you, I don't know, I'll just speak for myself. Then you begin to lose trust in that person, whether you should share with them anything, because it may come back on you. And I guess there's a fear there, not a fear like you're shaking and scared, but you don't want to open up, and then become pretty much silent, quiet. And you could be in a room with a bunch of people and still feel like you're alone. And I know I don't have a checklist that would make someone approve that I can trust them again. I think it just takes time. And I guess the more you don't want to put them off, though some people you actually need to cut out of your life because they're toxic. But I think you got to give them a chance, I guess. You want to have a person give you a chance. And I just think that it is a big part of a relationship between, you know, man and woman, boy and girl, friends. You know, that's a big part of our relationships, trust, because, you know, you want loyalty, and betrayal is a killer. So trust is very, very important, and I think it doesn't come easy sometimes, and you got to work at it, but you got to be vigilant, too, of if you have been in a situation where you don't. When you watch what you say, you watch what you do, and you're careful.
Mhm. Yeah. Well, those are some good thoughts, and I agree with what you're saying. With survivors, it's just so tough because we've just been betrayed so much and beaten and battered and put down, you know, exploited, you know, molested, you know, whatever the case may be. It's just tough for us. You know, the people who are streaming in, we know we have people who stream in who may be listening. We get it. You know, we are survivors and we get it. It's easy. it's easy to say, and it's a good thing to say, you know, we need to learn to trust, and not everybody's bad, and we need to give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, we need to give them the opportunity, you know, to prove whether they're trustworthy or not. But it's just so tough because, like Dr. Jaime said, you know, when I look at that picture, that could be two things. You know, it's hard. You know, it's hard not to see. It's kind of weird because, you know, you see the first image, and if it's a monster or whatever the case may be, you see that image and you can't get past it, and you don't even see the other image. You just automatically go to that. You're wired, like Doctor said, you're wired to that. It isn't until you're exposed to the other picture, you look at it at an angle, and you see the second image, and you can't unsee the second image once you've seen it. So, you know, there is hope. You know, there is hope out there that hopefully we can, you know, see things and not so much in a one-dimensional and, you know, give people a chance. And it's hard with survivors. It just, in you know, people who have been beaten and battered. It sounds easy, but it's not. But I think Dr. Jaime said at the beginning, it takes practice. You know, it's a work in progress. You know, we've got to narrow that hole every day. You know, pick at it. You know, work at it. I don't know, Dr. Jaime, what do you think about that?
I really took in what you said about the images. That once you see the other image, you can't go back and not see it. There's something like that in literacy. I think it was Cesar Chavez, maybe others who said, you know, once a person learns to read, they don't go back to just seeing symbols and shapes. There's something about us that it's the burden of learning. It's like, oh, God, now I got to, like, trust. You know, I can't just default to that other way. I mean, if we're going to grow, it's a wild challenge. I think I have. I didn't ever expect to be a hospice chaplain, and some people might think it's burdensome or really sad, and no doubt I walk in a lot of sadness with different people. But there's also something really clarifying about working with people who are clear. You know, like, I don't know if I have 6 months, maybe I have 3 months or whatever, and there's something about that time that I want to do more of, and that is, you know that my time's limited, and, you know, what do I need to let go of to, you know, that's not important as me here, you know, having some connection or joy or enjoyment or whatever. And, you know, when that happens for people, that's so fun, you know. Was it Darlene earlier saying about laughing as a nervous laugh? I mean, there's something like just lighter. And in fact, the word enlightenment seems to relate to being lighter. You know, humor is a way that we see that there's more going on than initial, you know, negative thing. So anyway, I'm really with you.
Thank you for that.
There's more. Oh no, just that there's once we have experiences, we can build on. I think Mark said that a little time.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's go back to Darlene and William. Darlene, do you have any thoughts on what you've heard?
Yeah. One thing, you know, when you said about once you see a picture, it's hard to get rid of that picture. Well, the things that were done to us, it leaves an imprint in our brain, and it gets filed in there somewhere and gets mixed in the everyday life, and it's hard to get to find out. You know, sometimes you want to say, what's really wrong? But you ain't going to get the answer till that's ready to come out of hiding. You know what I'm saying? Till that's ready, till that memory feels like you're ready. And it might come and slap you on the face one day, like, and it's like, oh, no, why right now? You know? But anyway, I don't want people to lose hope, but all these things get filed away kind of like in the mixture of the brain. The brain is a unique tool, you know?
It is, and, you know, and I'd like to comment on what you just said, particularly for people who may be streaming and listening. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, PTSD, we talk about that, and it's not fun. And it's not fun when you're in the middle of something and all of a sudden, you know, when you're in a situation, a social situation or whatever you're doing, and you kind of turn the corner and there it is. You know, it hits you in the face, like you said, and it's tough and it can bring us down. It can throw us into a fetal position, you know, days, weeks, whatever the case may be. It can really take us back. But, you know, if we look at PTSD, you know, in a second perspective, and hopefully, you know, not be able to unsee this thought on PTSD, is, you know, we have to get through it. A lot of times it slaps us on the face, but if we can remind ourselves that, you know, our memory has blocked that for a reason because we weren't ready to deal with it. And now our brain and our mind has told us, okay, it's time to deal with it. May not be the idyllic situation, but it's time to deal with it. And it can be a good thing because that gives us the opportunity to get through it and not, you know, to understand what happened to us, to face it, to see it where it can't be unseen and we can deal with it and heal from it. You know, it's hard to heal from something that your mind has blocked out and it's creating turmoil in your life and you can't pinpoint why and you don't want to face it. And it's just this big dark hole, this mystery that's plaguing our lives. And, you know, that gives us, the PTSD gives us the opportunity to work through some of those issues and give us a chance to heal. Dr. Jaime, am I in left out on that, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah.
Darlene?
I agree. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dr. Jaime, and then we'll go back to Darlene.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Jaime.
Thanks. I was just going to say, the coping mechanism is to shut down and disconnect, to dissociate, and that's normal. And a lot of different traditions have different ways of describing that. You know, like even the, you know, an angel will come and takes the person's soul out of the body so they don't have to endure, you know, what's going on. And that's one way. Some people talk about, you know, that dissociation. And when we're reconnecting with my abuse happened, you know, some 30 years later when I was, you know, a professor and top of my game, and things were solid. I was safe. I had people that I could trust, had good things going on. And that was then when I was ready enough to have all these things come back that needed to be faced. And so it is a kind of a painful paradox that this pain that comes up is actually an invitation for healing and for kind of revisiting in a way that frees us. And even nightmares, I've heard different people describe them, you know, in studies and psychologists about, you know, that are actually attempts at healing, you know, to process stuff that we can't put words to. And then rather than shut them out, and I have, I mean, there was a time when I was diagnosed with PTSD and I had medication that helped me to deal with a lot of things. But really, the deeper, that was stabilizing, but the healing part was allowing stuff to come up. And in fact, there's the writer is a spiritual teacher named Richard Rohr. He talks about, for males in particular, but I think it's for everybody, that deep spirituality is basically about how we deal with our pain. And by spirituality, I mean becoming whole, you know, practices that help us to be more integrated and to bring together experiences in a way that is helpful and not toxic. But, yeah, Tammy, I agree. These things, when they show up, it's to help us.
Right. Just sometimes it shows up at a awkward time, but that's okay. It shows up. You know, and like you said, you got your life together, and you're a professor, and you were on your game, and, you know, your body, mind, and soul told you it's time to deal with this. And that happens a lot, and it's hard to understand, but, you know, for anyone who may be listening, that can be a good thing. Like you said, a healing, an opportunity to an invitation to heal. So I like that. Darlene, you were about to say something. I want to give you an opportunity to get your thoughts out. Darlene?
Okay. I want to say sometimes that there's so many members that try to flood in at one time that
mm-hmm.
or flood in at the wrong time, and we got the capability of saying, no, not right now, put this away later. We're going to compartmentalize it in your mind and, you know, just say, okay, this is when I'm going to do this, this is when I'm going to do this. You know what I'm saying? Deal with
uh-huh.
one thing at a time, not the whole flood
sure.
of things, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So you get, sometimes
yeah.
you got to compartmentalize some of that. You know what I'm saying? So
I'm sure.
I just wanted to think of that. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. Go ahead, Becca.
Well, that's a healthy self-regulating practice. I mean, it's not saying I'm going to deny it. I'm never going to think about this. It's when there's a safe time. I mean, and as I mentioned, my own experiences flooded when I had supportive people around me. And we don't often get healing just by telling what our experiences are to anybody. It's when we're with people who we can feel safe with. We have a sense that they love us enough to walk with us. And so, yeah, I think that's a good, healthy kind of, call it self-regulating, you know, self-managing. Knowing that, I know, I hope, yeah, you will have time in other creative ways or with other people to process.
Absolutely. William, what are your thoughts on all this? I want to make sure you have an opportunity to participate.
You
got to
unmute yourself, Bill.
I got it.
there you go.
yeah, that's definitely an issue. Sometimes it can be overwhelming and flood people with everything they start thinking about it. And one of the things they need to do sometimes in that is kind of compartmentalize stuff and not let all that stuff flood in and like, overflow their thinking or their minds and stuff like that, because that has an effect on them too. And that it's really important.
We don't want them to commit suicide.
Yeah, get overwhelmed.
And that's another issue, is being overwhelmed like that, which that's a whole different perspective of it, but it can happen to those that are in those positions. And we try to avoid getting those people and helping those people and stuff. And because one of the things I'm involved in is some ministries that deal with that, but that's something
mm-hmm.
besides the point. And it's a very, very difficult way, because you've got to encourage them enough and bring them through enough to show them that there is hope, because they're losing hope when they get overwhelmed like that.
Mhm. Okay. Well, let me go, and I want to give Mark an opportunity, but I have to ask Dr. Jaime this, and then we'll go to Mark. We've got 15 minutes left. Dr. Jaime, you know, based on what Darlene, William, and I have been talking about, when you get overwhelmed, you know, you deal with this, I'm sure, in the hospice, in your hospice ministries, and William just said he deals with it in his church. What advice could you give someone who may be listening, you know, that may get that flood in there all at one time, and you dealt with it? I mean, what advice would you give them given the opportunity that's getting flooded?
Yeah, thanks. I would say on three levels, they're all important, but kind of the foundation is our bodies. You know, Gabor Mate has several great books. One is called The Body Keeps Score. And you know, the truth is our body absorbs all kinds of stress. And when we are flooded, a way to help regulate again is to pay attention to the body and do engage the body in some way. For some people, it could be like a vigorous running exercise, screaming, right, to get out, literally, you know, out all this energy and emotion and chemicals. Others use different kinds of breath work, and some call it like aggressive, you know, breathing. They call it horse breath or dragon. And for others, it's very slow. You know, we slow ourselves down. That old expression of count to 10, you know, we're like breathe and slow yourself down. So we can do things to tend to your body, even drinking water. Or, you know, actually, I heard recently somebody talk about the merits of, like, ice water. And, you know, for me, when I turn on the shower, it starts out pretty cold, and then it warms up. And recently I've taken the practice of just letting the cold water hit my wrists, you know, and alternate arms, and pay attention, you know, to that experience, so we don't get, you know, out of our bodies. And actually then that is kind of a practice of like, okay, this is temporary. You know, and I'm feeling it, but I know it's not going to stay hurtful cold. And there's a book called Bearing the Unbearable, a woman who psychologist, and she talks about all these cases of grief and how people have suffered with PTSD, and she has a lot of different suggestions about the body. You know, for some of those, even get barefoot, you know, like walks on, not rocks, but let yourself feel things. Anyway, mm-hmm. Pay attention to the body and do something with that. And our mind, similarly. And this is like when a person's flooded. I mean, it could be simple. You know, just to, on a physical level, touch something, you know, on the mind level, notice something, stop and just look and pay attention, like get your attention to one thing, and that helps to regulate as well. There are sounds that we can hear and soundtracks and things like that if we have time, but like in the moment, I mean, certainly body, drink water, you know, do something that gives you the experience of your senses. And then when we have more time, of course, there's more mindfulness practices, and spiritual could be, you know, meditation and things that help us to feel connected. You know, and earlier we talked about creativity and writing and maybe, you know, art and all these other things. But it's we can regulate again. We can find, you know, come back to ourselves, even though we are wired in a moment of overwhelm, and in PTSD it's ongoing. So those are just some quick answers.
Okay, well, those are some good answers. Go ahead, darling.
Yeah, I got a couple of numbers if people want to write them down. Okay, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. Again, 1-800-273-8255. Or they could text DO to 741-741 to reach a trained crisis counselor for Crisis Text Line, a global not-for-profit organization that's free 24/7 and confidential.
Cool.
Thank you for that.
Cool beans. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I want to add to that just that we, as much as we may have good experience, we may not be in a place to rescue somebody or to be, you know, a person that person needs most. I mean, we can certainly be with, and our example could be encouraging that, you know, we know what we've been through and we're here, and, you know, others can come through what they're going through. But the idea of, you know, if someone's drowning and we're not good swimmers, we don't jump in, you know, because we're both going to go down. And so we have to do our own bit of skill building and that perspective, and then we can witness or be a resource in some way. But, you know, but thank you for those numbers, because there are people who, that is, you know, they're more practiced, developed
and
skill set. Yeah.
I want to tell
and
people why I just left. I want to tell people why I just left, okay? When you were speaking about somebody drowning and you can't swim, well, one time my twin sister was in a deeper part of the water, and she was panicking, which I'm an average swimmer, you know, but I got to her, and she was too busy trying to drown me. And so,
absolutely.
I don't know how I got the energy to do this, but I just wouldn't lift her up, and she wouldn't sail through the air, and I threw her all the way to some shallow water.
Good for you. Good for you.
I don't know how I did that, but that was so funny. So I had to share that, okay?
Yeah.
Sure.
That's real.
Well,
yeah,
we've got 8 minutes
up.
Go ahead.
The other thing that I was going to suggest, too, is them not be afraid to seek professional help, because professional help is a lot of times needed in cases like that. And
sure.
And we're, you know, we need to seek out the professionals sometimes when we have the situations or people like that have to seek out the professionals, because we can help, we can support, but we still need the professionals to do their job.
Right, we can,
remember,
we can get support.
Remember that when, if you need, if you do go for a psychological help, or whether you are too afraid to do it, you are not crazy. That does not deem you as crazy. I just want to let you know that.
No, and if you do find psychic, like, you know, one thing I'd like to mention on survivors is, you know, we find someone, if you're a survivor of child abuse, is find someone who has dealt with this. We had a girl on here. She passed away. What was her name? I can't remember her name. She was in Washington. And I tell you, I just wanted to get on a plane and go over there and just slap the psychiatrist she went to, because, how did you let this happen? You were old enough. I mean, it destroyed her. She passed away. I can't remember her name. But anyway, bless her heart. Sometimes, you know, just find a good one. And if it's not the right one, change. I want to give Mark an opportunity to talk. We've got 7 minutes left, and I want to make sure Mark has an opportunity to participate if he chooses. Mark, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I would say to anyone who gets overwhelmed or in a place where you don't know what to do, you can look on the NASCA website and find people on the contact list that maybe someone might even be close to you in your city, and call them and talk to them and share your own, what you're overwhelming about. And then, you know, because we need to reach out to someone. I know William said that it's not wrong to seek out help, you know. And Darlene said, you're not crazy to seek out help. It's just part of who we are, human beings. You know, if you have no one else to talk to, you know, you want to find someone you can. And I would suggest, if you can't find anyone, look on the NASCA website. There's plenty of contact people on there that would share with you and talk with you. And you can get some relief.
I would be glad to. I would be glad to.
Yeah.
You can look me up at there. You can look me up at NASCA, Darlene Clark, on the webpage. I would be glad to, if you want to reach out and call, I'll be glad to talk with you.
That's
absolutely.
Right,
well, Mark has a good point. I serve on there, and obviously Darlene does too. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank
someone
you, Mark.
Was saying something. Well, we've got 5 minutes left, so it's time for us to go ahead let's do a roundabout, and then I want to give Dr. Jaime a time to do some final thoughts. So I'll start with Darlene. If you've got some final thoughts, I'd like to thank Dr. Jaime for his time. Now would be good. Darlene?
Well, thank you so much. It is a pleasure reaching out to you and coming here and talking with you. And thank you for all that you do, because I know you have a difficult job. I know, and I commend you for it.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing that, Darlene. And thank you for sharing your story with us tonight as well. You've been on the show for several years now, and I've gotten, you know, bits and pieces of your show. I mean, of your story. And you're an incredible lady, so thank you for sharing with us. It's an honor.
Thank you.
William, do you have some final thoughts or, you know, final comments for Dr. Jaime?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Jaime, for being on the NASCA show and the family. And you are so much help to others in this NASCAR family and others that tune in. And I'm proud of the job that you keep doing. So keep it up.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, William. Mark, we've got 3 minutes left. Comment you'd like to make to Dr. Jaime?
Sure. Yeah, I would say thank you for coming on and sharing what you shared tonight. And I want to congratulate you on the fact that, you know, when you work with hospice, that's not easy. And I know that you're good at it. I know, you know, about hospice a little bit because, you know, my wife was a nurse on a hospice team years ago, and I used to, you know, hear what goes on. And it's not an easy situation, but I'm glad that you're a part of that and doing a good job.
Absolutely. Thank you for those comments, Mark. Dr. Jaime, you've got about 2 minutes if you'd like to make some final comments.
Thanks. Thank you. I was really struck earlier. We didn't talk much about it, but it led to that, you know, information about the suicide hotline. And the idea of how we are in this journey together. And there are a few expressions around that. One is that joy shared is twice joy, and sorrow shared is half sorrow. There's something about sharing that is good for us. And there's an idea that if you hold up the two words illness and wellness and then cover up most of the letters except for the first one, you know, illness relates to isolation, the I, you know, just us. And the wellness is we. We heal, we learn, we grow together. And one of my favorite quotes is from a New Zealand woman named Lila Watson. And I think of this in my hospice work and also just sharing tonight, and that expression is, if you're here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you're here because your liberation is bound up in mine, then let's work together. And I love that.
No.
This idea of we are interconnected. Our experiences are related to others, our healing, our growth, all that. We need others. We need one another. So the last line of what I read earlier is, after all these years, I've begun to wonder if the secret of living well is not in having all the answers, but in pursuing unanswerable questions in good company. So thank you for being good company.
Absolutely. Thank you for those final thoughts. I wanted to thank you personally as well. It's always a good show when you're on hosting with us. I really appreciate you. Mark, William, Darlene, thank you for the support. I really appreciate it. I think this is a really good show, very informative. So I'm going to end the show with saying God bless the children of the world and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
Another tomorrow. 'Cause that dawn was